Blog Talk Radio.
The name Chip Fitzgerald returned to his ancestors. The name Romaine Chip Fitzgerald is perhaps not widely known, except for his supporters. In his wild youth, decades ago, he was a teenage member of the L.A. chapter of the Black Panther Party, which he joined after a brief stint in jail. He was a wild youth at a wild time in history, the 60s, when it seemed like the very world was on fire. Chip, from Watts, fell in with a crew of wild boys who were full of mischief, which landed him in reform school known as Juvenile Hall, run by the California Youth Authority. Chip's youthful rebelliousness led to spend in solitary, where, now surrounded by silence, he read about and became captivated by the Black Freedom Movement. These articles awakened him to the existence of the Black Panther Party, the boldest of Black freedom movements in the 60s era. Upon his 1969 release, Romaine Chip Fitzgerald formally joined the militant revolutionary organization. Chip took to the party like a fish takes to water by helping its free breakfast programs, selling Panther newspapers, and assisting in other party programs. According to others who joined at the same time, Chip was an enthusiastic member, and more importantly, his mother proudly supported his new commitment to community work. But good times sometimes don't remain good. For 1969 marked Chip's involvement in two shootings, leaving one victim dead. It also marked his return to prison as an adult. These charges, Fournier's antipathy towards Black Panthers, led to Chip's incarceration for 52 years, despite his eligibility for parole in 1976. 2021. Chip, who suffered from a massive stroke, passed away in a California hospital while lying in shackles. Chip was the longest-held ex-Black Panther in America, Romaine Chip Fitzgerald. After over a half century in chains, returns to his ancestors. From imprisoned nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. You just heard, of course, Mumia Abu-Jamal, one of his commentaries. That wasn't the latest one. That was one that he did back in May. And actually, that was during a time period when he was ill. But, you know, as always, Mumia somehow manages to still do what he does best, or one of the things that he do best, and that is, of course, to provide information by way of his commentaries and making sure that we get the information and the message the way that it needs to be delivered. And so, again, he talked about yet another freedom fighter, another political prisoner who succumbed to this system in terms of its incarceration of our people. And so we thought that it would be kind of appropriate to play that particular one by Mumia. This is Black August, and Black August, again, focuses on, of course, our political prisoners, the prison industrialized complex, and all of those things that are relevant to how this system continuously keeps us enslaved, be it in this particular situation, being Black August. Of course, we're talking about this mass incarceration, but the way this system manipulates our people in particular in getting caught up in its shackles known as prison system. And so tonight we're going to talk a little more about that and what we have to now begin to do about some of that, and of course the continued work that is necessary to free all of our political prisoners. With that said, we will give you an update on Baba Russell Maroon Schultz. It is some very serious things that is going on with him right now, and there are some requests or demands that are now being issued. There's a rally coming up on Monday here in Philadelphia to bring greater attention to what some of the issues are presently, and of course the continuation of the fact that he needs to be freed. He and Mumia Abu-Jamal, of course Iman Jamil Al-Amin, Dr. Matula Shakur and others, and so Sunda Aden Kohli as well and others. And so again, we're going to give you information in regards to, you know, what you can do possibly to assist in whatever way. And of course, some of that just means to send out information. Okay. At any rate, we thank you for tuning in to this segment. I want to give a quick shout out to our sister Keisha. She's in Philly this weekend, her and her crew from New York. Some of the sisters are here visiting the city of so-called brotherly love. And definitely interesting, they also call it sisterly affection, which was here once, but unfortunately, it has dissipated quite a bit. With that said, one of the things that we want to talk about in a very near future, family, not so much tonight, and that is setting up something that will enable us to put our grievances in a forum or some kind of format that will allow us to get it aired out internally, more or less, but also to come up with some opinions. We just had a recent situation in terms of one of our MWM units. It's called the M4 Group. And the M4 Group is kind of an entity with the MWM movement that provide services, as quiet as it's kept. Some do know about it and some don't, and we're going to make it even more known now. But we provide services such as marketing, merchandising, you know, how to brand and things of that nature. We now have an attorney who is going to be joining us. We're going to tell you more about her, Sister Carla, to make sure that everything is in its proper place, as this system sometimes demands you to have it. But at any rate, we were providing some services for a group that we were working with at the time and had an agreement with that group to provide PR kinds of things, marketing, management, and things of that nature, and promoting their event. They had a monthly event, and again, we were asked to help and facilitate. And, you know, we would have done certain things for free, but we were offered, you know, a minimum amount just as a gratuity, just to, you know, say, okay, we want to support what you all are doing. At any rate, for whatever reason, and we'll go more into it later, we got, what do they call it, shifted or something. Anyway, we did the work that was required, but when it came time for the payment, the last payment, the parties decided not to do so and came up with some real interesting reasons as to why. Even though the work that they utilized, they indicated in writing and verbally how well it was done and how, you know, much they appreciated it and, you know, blah, 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 and they utilized it, you know, widely, et cetera, but for some reason felt no need to pay for, you know, the services that we render. So my point is that we obviously have to come up with better mechanisms to deal with better accountability and also to make sure that people, you know, have a better chance of knowing how various entities actually operate in real time. Because one of the problems that has been with the development of Black liberation is the lack of principled conduct within those circles. And I'm talking about specifically within the Black liberation or Black consciousness or Black culture or revolutionary, whatever you want to call it, those entities, right? Because there is a level that has to be dealt with within those bodies. All right, now, outside of that, that's another thing. But definitely within those structures, those who advocate or profess to be about justice and Black liberation and Guza Saba and all those good things, they need to be held accountable for that. So, again, we're going to start introducing, mechanisms to begin to address some of that. Because over the years, we've seen some kind of foul things happen. We've seen people attacked, I mean, literally physically attacked at events. We've seen disputes, you know, out in the public. And, of course, you know, you go back 50 years, you will know that that happened a whole lot, roughly 50 years ago during a certain era of time. And we got through that and passed it. But now we are in another period of time with a lot of fronting and a lot of fake stuff. And if we don't get a handle on that, we are going to find ourselves really in a situation that is going to be just more horrendous than what we think. And the enemy is going to use that to their advantage to the max, just like they're using, Black Lives Matter and other stuff to make it seem like that's representing a segment of our people that it definitely don't, all right? But because of the confusion that it has been enabled to, generate and the misrepresentation, you know, it has just created more work for other folks that are really about dealing with some areas, and particularly when it comes to self-determination and real independence, right? And so we've got to start making some things a little clearer as to what some things really are and what they are not. And, I mean, it's okay. As long as you know the truth, as long as you know that you can select some stuff and not, you know, have it force-fed to you or not have it disguised as something else when, in fact, it is definitely not that. So we've got to do a better job, and we're going to. With that said, one of the things that has slowed MWM down over the years is, you know, lack of finances. And so we've been doing some test runs on some things as we now begin to secure the financial things that we need to have in place. We've worked very hard in these past couple of years in particular to make sure that as we proceed in building this movement that we have the monies to do so. And without kissing butt, without selling out, without giving the enemy a lot of our stuff that, you know, people literally sell stuff to the enemy. Our stuff, they sell it. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little more later. But the point being, it took us a while to figure out how we were going to really be able to generate a large sum of revenue in a way that really had integrity connected to it. And so we've done that. So the point being, we've got to do better, and so very shortly tonight, we are going to start introducing to you some of the things that are necessary for us to look at what some call generational wealth, but also just basic, fundamental, what we call practical unity in the context of wealth building, economic development for some, and so forth and so on. As MWM and its affiliates move forward with dealing with the issues of reparatory justice, i.e. reparations and other forms of compensation and remedies, there has to be some infrastructures. Anyone that cannot give you some clarity on infrastructure of how things are going to operate in a certain kind of way, you need to examine it very carefully. So what we will be presenting to you, family, is at least some beginnings to give you insight into how we're literally developing not only the MWM Universal Movement in itself, but some of the other components, projects, and so forth. With that said, tonight we're going to talk about, this is Black Business Month. Well, MWM has put it in the context of black business and self-determination, because these two things for us have to connect. And so we're going to talk about black business, but we're going to also talk with a brother who, I'm so excited about this. Do you all know that there's a credit union that's based in Baltimore? It's called Appeal. That's right. It's called Appeal. And we are going to talk with one of the brothers, or the brother who is actually one of the key entities of this Appeal Corporation. And this thing is so serious for and about black folks from a Pan-Africanist perspective, by the way. So when my brother, Baba Yao, kind of brought this to my attention, I had heard of them before, but, you know, for whatever reason, didn't really connect. But, you know, once he brought it back to my psyche, to my attention, I was like, wow, we got to really get, not only get them, you know, on to talk about the Appeal program, but, you know, we want to talk about partnering, building, doing what we know needs to happen to connect the black dots in such a way that we are exemplifying Nguza Saba and Ma'atik principles on a day-to-day basis, all right? And so very shortly, we're going to talk with our brother, Dr. Kalishi Ikwin, and we're going to talk with him in regards to what the Appeal program is. And when we talk about some, you know, call it financial literacy, well, they have a program, and they do call it financial literacy, but they also have something called historical and cultural literacy. They also have something called the Black Saturdays Co-op, and they have a think tank as well. But again, to be able now to become a member of a real bona fide kind of credit union, wow, I'm like, this is definitely on point. Just to give you briefly insight, it says the Appeal Inc. is a black empowerment, right? You hear that? Empowerment entity. And so we're talking about, you know, things that is relevant to financial empowerment in this case, but not just financial, all across the board. Now, they have classes. They, again, deal with both financial literacy and historical literacy. And, you know, this is for and about black folks, right? And so they say it is to organize and strategically utilize the vast resources of people of African descent locally and internationally as well. All right. So again, we are going to talk about financial stability, maintenance, and development all across the board. But again, I think it's important that we get a better understanding, overstanding, whichever one you prefer, of, you know, how the system actually operates when it comes to monetary, you know, kinds of things. You know, the thing is, again, if we do not understand certain things, then obviously to be able to, you know, manage it or exchange it or what have you, it will tend to be, you know, a little less possible. And we want to make sure that we're able to lessen, you know, anything that hinders our capability to advance further. Lastly, what MWM will be doing this year is formulating our Black Women's Investment Clubs, for lack of a better word. And we're not just talking about one. We're talking about several types. And so we're going to be telling you more about that. We want to invest in our people. For example, sisters in particular, they have a product or something. We want to be able to examine the product and see if we can invest as a collective. That's one of the things we'll be talking about at our summit this year. The other thing we're going to be is looking at investing in our communities in terms of property, collective purchasing for property for our community purposes. These are some of the things, again, that we've been working on for these past years and now are creating the infrastructure mechanisms that will enable us to do the things that, you know, we've been talking about and been wanting to do. Excuse me. Over the years, we've been really watching and waiting to see who would step up. You know, it's so interesting, and next year is going to really kind of show and tell the story, because we're going to raise some serious questions, and the serious questions are going to be, why would a group, organization, business, institution not feel is not the necessity, the good intelligence to support an entity that produced bringing forward 2 million black women? Now, that's not rocket science. That's just plain old, let's do some stuff from a business standpoint. I mean, there's other things, obviously, but next year we're going to really see. We're going to really see some very clear things, and it's going to be very interesting. Anyway, moving right along. Let's see. The last thing we want to remind you is, of course, if you're in Philly on Tuesday, and we're hoping that folks on a national level might want to also engage in this. We're calling it National RBG Flag Day. It's also our commemoration or tribute to the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the UNIA ACL, Tuesday, August the 17th. And so we'll talk a little more about that. Of course, we're here in Philly. We will be assembling at 5:30 and going over to Malcolm X Park, leaving from Paul Robeson House at 6 o'clock, going over to Malcolm X Park. And there we will have arts and culture, speakers, et cetera, until approximately around 8:30. So I'll give you a little more information about that a little later on as well. And the other thing we want to remind you about, of course, is September 4th. This is the kickoff. This is the kickoff for Boots on the Ground. Hopefully our people will assist in getting at least 9 signatures along with yourself to sign on to the letter of intent that we will be taking or submitting to the United Nations in December of this year. This, of course, commemorates the 70th year anniversary of Paul Robeson taking the We Charge Genocide petition to the United Nations on December 17, 1951. So we are going to use this as a teachable moment, as well as furthering, advancing the movement for reparatory justice, as Queen Mother Moore, Mother Callie House, and others have definitely indicated we should do. Okay. Next coming up, family, is I'm looking for our brother in queue. I'm not seeing him as of yet. Let's see. Brother Kalichi, if you are in queue, you need to press 1 so that I can see that you are available. Okay, very good. I do see you now. Okay, so what we're going to do, family, we're going to have a very powerful conversation. I think if you don't have something to take some notes with, I think you might want to do that, because this information is critical, particularly right about now. Again, a lot of people are talking about reparatory justice, reparations, and it's a wonderful thing. But we need to get ready. We need to be prepared. At least those of us who understand, overstand the necessity of what we need to do in our families and communities. And so we're going to start with some kind of preliminary things. And so that means, you know, within our families, within our own personal and family structures, we can now begin to implement some things. We talk about unity. We talk about other principles of the Nguza Saba, Ujima, Ujamaa, and so forth. But how does one literally apply it, and not just in December? So we, MWM, and others are going to now start bringing that information forward to you. We certainly are looking forward to connecting with any entity that is serious, unapologetic, and really, really committed to real justice and liberation for our people. We definitely are here to work with you in whatever way possible. With that said, appeal is in the house, family. And so now we're going to bring in our brother, and we're going to talk about what the Appeal Credit Union is about, how you all, we all, can get involved, support, et cetera, et cetera. The time is now. The time is really past time as far as I'm concerned, but certainly the time is now. So without further ado, we're going to welcome Brother Dr. Kalichi is joining us. Whoop, hold on, let me unmute his mic, and here we are. Greetings to you, my brother. How are you this evening?
Greetings. Greetings, my sister. How are you?
Oh, listen, wonderful, wonderful. As I always say, as long as I can wake up and continue this fight and see that some victories are ahead, I'm going to always be good.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for the opportunity to share with your audience, to connect with you and to collaborate, and hopefully we build some blocks that we can use to build some bigger things going forward.
Oh, it is no doubt about it. So before we get started, please share just some historical information about the Appeal Credit Union. When did it get started? Where did it get started? I think we know the why, but you can give us a little bit on that too.
Right. So just some clarification. Appeal is a membership organization. Appeal was founded in 2013, actually May 19th, 2013.
Oh, wow.
We all know how significant
mm-hmm.
that
oh,
date
yeah.
is.
Absolutely.
So we're a membership organization. You know, we have members all over the world. Most of our members are in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, but we have members, you know, board members, and partners all over the world and all over the country. So that's the broad makeup of Appeal. As you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, our focus is not just on local issues. When I say local, I mean the United States, right?
Mm-hmm.
We recognize that we are part of a global African family, and in the long term, we need to be planning and thinking in that way, with that perspective, in order to really have functional change, you know, just real substantial change. So as you mentioned, our mission is to organize our resources, because we know that it's not necessarily a lack of resources. We know we have we're wealthy, we're rich on the continent. We have lots of wealth right here in America. We have a lot of African people who have access to and who have a lot of wealth individually. And, you know, because we're operating in this individualistic paradigm, we're not able to make the most of those resources. So it's not a lack of resources in our community. Even though you see lots of poverty, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
wealth there. It's just not organized. It's just not targeted, which is why, you know, our first mission is to organize, not to ask anybody to give us anything, but to take what
right.
we already have and organize
mm-hmm.
it in a way that is targeted to solve problems and to resolve issues and to really help us build self-sustaining, self-sufficient, prosperous communities going forward. So that's our broad mission as an organization. As I said, it starts from a local, it goes to national, and it's global, because we know that our struggle is global and our people
yeah.
are global. And if we pigeonhole ourselves into being just focused on what's going on in America, then we really are a minority. But globally, of course, we know we're not. So we have to have that
mm-hmm.
perspective. So that's the broad mission of Appeal. Like I said, we launched in 2013, and one of our initial platforms was the founding of the Appeal Federal Credit Union. We looked at various
mm-hmm.
Financial institutions as potential models, but what we found was that the credit union model really allowed us to be collaborative with other African people. We wanted to be as accessible and as for the small d democratic financially, in the sense that regardless of how much you have, you know, as long as you're willing to work with us, as long as you're going to be part of what we're doing, we want you to have an equal say. Unlike, you know, banks where they're owned by families or board of directors or what have you, with a credit union, it's the members that own it. And every member has an equal say in what happens. You know, so that structure really seemed consistent with our mission and our need to get our people involved. So we started organizing the credit union, and we also at the same time started doing financial literacy workshops you mentioned. And it's really critical because if you don't understand the system, if you don't understand the mechanism of the system, then you really become, not only can you not capitalize on it, become victims of it, right? And some of our people have some degree of information and some have very little. And you know, unfortunately, we need to make sure that those people who have the biggest gaps also get the most help, and we're able to really put together a series that deals with a broad range of things, everything from balancing your checkbook to, you know, creating generational wealth in terms of creating trust, how to use insurance as an investment tool, you know, how to invest in property and building, and how to even buy your own house. How do you create the susus with your family and friends and community?
Yes.
All these things we cover at various workshops. And we have a total of 32 workshops throughout the year. So that's almost every weekend. And we do them in a series of eight, and we alternate between the financial literacy workshops and the historical and cultural literacy workshops, because we want our people to have an orientation in terms of our situation right now. We have to understand the past in order to understand the present, but we want folks to have context, because if you don't have context, the money means nothing. You know, all the money in the world, you know, does not elevate a people. If anything, the money can end up being a weapon used against you if you don't know who you are and whose you are, more importantly. So it's important to have that literacy component. So in addition to doing the organizing for the credit union, we also make sure we have programs to actually bring education to our people wherever they happen to be. No matter how educated they are, there's always something that they don't know. You know, so we need to make sure that people are getting fed intellectually at the same time. So we've been organizing for the credit union, and we started fundraising for the credit union about 2016. So there's a certain amount that we need in order to get the charter to actually begin to operate as a full credit union. So we've actually been able to get halfway, close to halfway to that amount. So, you know, we just need to continue that effort where we're growing as an organization. We have almost 1,000 members, and we're a membership organization. So that means that we have people who pay dues, right? Those annual dues help us with the programs we do in the community, like offering the literacy programs, like a lot of partnerships and things we do for black businesses in the community. We also have a Black Saturdays co-op, which partners with black manufacturers. It is critical that African people make those basic things that we use.
Yes.
I mean, we're not talking about luxury items. We're not talking about candles. I have nothing against candles, but I'm talking about, like, toothpaste, mouthwash, bathroom tissue, detergent, you know, stuff you're going to use. You're gonna use these things one way or the other. The question is the money that you're spending when you're using those things going towards your people, or is it going outside your community?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to create manufacturers where there aren't any, but where there are manufacturers, we need to support them, make sure that they're able to grow their products and expand their access to customers, so that we can continue to not only provide these products, but even create jobs in our communities and make sure that our communities are as self-sufficient as possible. So we partner with manufacturers like True, like Freedom Paper, like mm-hmm. Good Vibes, like Ashley Pure. There are so many of them, and we carry all their products at the co-op. So co-op is it's actually a store that we have in mm-hmm. D.C. that carries, and we only carry products manufactured by black people. If it's not made by black people, I don't care who's selling it. If we're not making it, we don't carry it. And the reason we do that is we want to make sure that when you walk in there, you don't have to check the labels. You ain't got to look for the Afro hair or some name on the side. No, if it's in there, a black person made it. And you know, we have to really reorient ourselves in order for our dollars to recirculate in our communities. And the co-op is about facilitating that reorientation. We also partner with black farmers who bring produce, you know, fresh organic produce every co-op. So that's all part of the broader mission, right? So as we're organizing and raising money for the credit union, you know, to actually launch, for us to actually get the charter to launch, we're also doing this other work in the community, the education, the partnership with the manufacturers, the partnership with the various businesses. We have a lot of different programs that we do where we support either restaurants or storefronts and various businesses. And of course, you mentioned we have the Lasana K. Mack Think Tank, which is actually our organizing tool. It allows us to reach brothers and sisters all over the world. We partner with organizations that are really working on solutions, you know, thinking through problems and working on solutions to problems that are relevant to people of African descent. And there are a lot of brothers and sisters who are doing that all over the world, but if we're not connected and we're not sharing it, then all that
That's
work,
right.
you know, not only it doesn't do anybody any good, but you end up replicating work somebody else has done. So us collaborating, you know, through the think tank allows us to really bring some of those things to fruition. I mean, that's a whole lot, but that's the broad, you know, sense of the organization. Like I say, we are a socioeconomic organization. It's black empowerment. Mm-hmm. It's not just about money, because we know it's not about money. You know, the fight for liberation is not a physical one. It's a mental one. It's about raising the consciousness and the knowledge base of our people. Because as soon as a giant realizes it's a giant and it's laying down, it'll get up.
But right
now we're not there. You know, we don't realize we're a giant, and we don't realize that somebody's walking on us. So our job is to wake up the giant. Once you wake up the giant, we're good.
Wow, I know that's right. Well, my brother, you know, it's interesting because a lot of what you said falls right in line with not only some of the things that MWM and our affiliates are doing, but we like to connect what we call the black dots. And on October the 11th, we are going to commemorate what we call Ken Bridges Day. And a lot of what you just said sounds so very much like some of the things that he was also talking about and attempting to do when he created and co-founded the MATA system. I don't know if you're familiar with, what they had a few years ago with MATA products.
Yeah, MATA Network, yes.
Yes, exactly. And so, Ken Bridges was just brilliant. And one of the things that he really talked a lot about was what he called internal reparations, about how we need to do with each other. A form of exchanging and interaction economically, financially, and so forth. And he called it internal reparations. I'm sure there's some other phrases that people might want to use. But the idea, again, is doing with one another what we can do at this point in time. And so that certainly, my brothers, is what you have indicated. One of the things that really drew me to you, to the organization, even more so than what I initially heard when I started reading some of the information, and you talked about the founder, Lasana. Well, started reading a little bit about him. What struck me was, of course, something that said, he was one of the founding members of the Encobia Society. But then when I went down, it said something that struck me and said that he was an avid student of history, that had an appreciation and understanding of the works like the Honorable Marcus Garvey, Kwame Nkrumah, Malcolm X, and Stephen Biko. Well, that right there did it
absolutely
for me. That did it for
absolutely
me.
And he was a very prolific musician as well. He was a founding member of Black Notes, and much of Black Notes music is dedicated to those people you just mentioned. You know, I mean, he really brought the spirit, not just from what he was reading from his own education,
right,
but he brought it to the people in the music.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is why it really connects, because over these years, MWM has had to figure out how are we going to not only maintain what we have, but advance. And one of the areas that we're focusing on is the arts. So that's why, again, this is like a real connection, because we realized that with the arts, we were able to do several things at one time. And that, you know, the arts can be very lucrative financially, but also enable us to deal with education, you know, other kinds of networking and so forth. So when I mentioned Ken, that was also because one of the new components that we're putting in place is called actually the Mata, not Mata, but the Ma'ata. In other words, his was M-A-T-A-H, Mata. Ours is
right.
Ma'ata. And it's connected to the principles of Ma'at. So that's why we put both M-A-A-T-A-H. And it actually is an acronym for Music and Art Amplifying Truth and Harmony. You see? And
that
is one of our, yes, and that's one of our new components, which will deal with art in terms of music and visual art as well, because it's music and art amplifying truth and harmony, the Ma'ata. And so, again, this is something that we're going to be putting out later in October as a part of our 24-year anniversary. So, you know, connecting all these pieces. So let's go back for one moment. So now, what do you need to do? What needs to be done, rather, to now get to the next level of appeal?
Right. Well, it depends on what aspect. We have several platforms. You
mm-hmm.
know, and each one is very well managed by independent groups within the organization. Whether you're talking about the literacy program, we're actually in the middle of our historical culture literacy. We know about. Hopefully, your audience has heard about the earthquake that happened in Haiti.
Yes.
Today.
Yes.
Which, you know, right, a lot of information is still coming in.
Yes.
You know, and it just so happened, you know, it just so happened, even before the assassination of the president a couple of weeks ago, we had planned a program today to talk about Haiti, the first independent Black Republic. And its critical role in the struggle for African liberation. And our brother Gerald Horn spoke at our workshop today on Haiti, and of course we didn't have any idea that this that either that or this was going to be happening. So it was even that much more relevant, you know. But
wow.
You know, one thing I would ask people to do is to, you know, go to appealing.org and look at the workshops and programs we have. And if you feel so inclined and you feel as if our mission is consistent with your mission, then join
mm-hmm.
us. I mean, so that's
mm-hmm.
one thing you can do. You know, even if you don't necessarily join us as join the organization, you can definitely join in and attend the workshops that we have. Next week, we're dealing with next Saturday, we're dealing with the Whitney plantation. I don't know if you're familiar with it in Louisiana. It's a museum that is
mm-hmm.
is the only museum at that level as well preserved as it is that truly deals with the Ma'afa in a way that is targeted towards reorienting African people. And you know, it's a pilgrimage that every African in the world really needs to go to, what they have there, because they've been able to document, you know, not just, you know, where, you know, where not just where people were, but where they came from, you know, from the books, including their names. I'm talking about, like, they have a Vietnam Memorial type of wall with Africans' names and their African name before they came. And where they and the ship they came on, and I mean, talking about detail. Like, I mean, if you want to know, you know, it's really. And then of course, they have a lot of information there about the German Coast Revolt, which a lot of folks don't know about, you know, because the slavery experience was mostly us struggling against it. The revolts were commonplace. You know, it's made to seem as if it's a thing that happened here and there. It happened all the time. That's why essentially they realized they couldn't maintain it, because it was literally, you know, destroying the fabric of the United States, because Africans were revolting everywhere. So so that history is really critical. So we're going to have, you know, the curator of that museum next weekend. So we have something every week. We recently lost our brother Renoka Rashidi. Renoka was actually supposed to be part of this series. He spoke with Appeal at a presentation back in March, and we were really looking forward to having him come back, because he said he was going to Egypt. You know, of course, we know he transitioned in chemistry. Yes. But you know, brother Paul Coates and brother Tony Browder are going to be speaking about him later on in the next couple of weeks and series we'll have it. So really, I would say just come through and see what we're doing and hopefully join, because you know what we need our people to get engaged in what we're doing. And above that, for the credit union, we are at a stage of fundraising. We've done the organizing. We've got the pieces together. We just need the capital. You know, we're actually trying to raise $300,000, and we've already raised close to $150,000. So we're almost halfway there, and this is just us. Mm-hmm. This ain't a grant from Oprah. This is just Pan African people. We want to make sure that we control what we do. Yes. Right? We know it's not about trying to get. We've had a lot of black entrepreneurs who are heads of corporations and folks who got money from Kellogg. They want to get. We don't want that money. We want our money, because we know that we only have to answer to us. We want to answer to ourselves. It's critical that we do it for ourselves, so that we know we own it, right? So through that that process and being true to that process, we've been able to get this far. So really, we're in a trajectory to get to where we're going, you know, very soon. And of course, the more members we have, then that helps with that mission as well. And of course, you know, being a member of Appeal allows you to be involved with all these platforms, whether you want to help with the financial literacy, whether you're interested in historical cultural literacy, whether you want part of a think tank or help put that together, or the co-op, or many of the other things that we're engaged in, the fundraising, the membership. So the thing to do is just to, you know, go to appealinc.org, appealinc.org. Check out our workshops. You can join. You can donate to the credit union if you feel so inclined to do so. But we really want you to join. We want you to be part of what we're doing, because it's the connecting of our people that's the most important thing for us.
I know that's right. And you know what? I'm so happy to hear you emphasize doing for self. Again, I mean, this is something that for whatever reason – it seems like it's getting away or has gotten away from a lot of our people, a lot of our communities. I know I was raised on the ideas of self-determination, doing for self. And it doesn't mean you can't get, you know, some other stuff if that's what you want to do, but you still need to have something that is totally independent. And you know, we've learned to do that. But for some reason, it has become almost like taboo in certain communities. I know here in Philly, 90% of black folks that talk about being black and all of that, if you ask them, what are you doing to self-determine, they can't answer you. And there ain't really no even effort to try to do that, you know. So it is so important that we bring that kind of energy and thing forward. So, and one other sidebar, family, brother mentioned Dr. Renoka Rashidi. I'm sure All of you or most of you have heard that he has made transition. He's one of our new ancestors. And we just wanted to remind everyone that on Monday, August the 16th, which happens to have been his Earth Day, there is going to be a kind of a Zoom tribute that the Harambe Division 369 or 389, I can't really tell, is hosting, okay? And it's going to feature a lot of folks on it. So again, on Monday, August the 16th, there is a Zoom tribute at 7:30 to Dr. Ronoko Rashidi. And let's see if I can find some contact information. Yep, here you go. For further information, you can call area code 202-256-2518. Again, 202-256-2518. Again, it's a Zoom presentation, a tribute to Dr. Ronoko Rashidi, Monday, August the 16th at 7:30 p.m. Okay, moving right along. Oh, I'm loving this. I am loving this. Now here's one of the things, just as a kind of, something I like to put out. We're looking to connect with artists, for example. Those artists that have over the years talked about social justice issues, well, we're getting ready next week to put a call out to conscientious artists. And we're saying to them, will you support our We Charge Genocide platform, mission, and so forth? I mean, if you're doing all this talk and you talk about Black Lives Matter and all of that, here's something that has not only a historical connection, but has a real plan of action in terms of reparatory justice. We're talking about right now obtaining our first 1 million signatures that we'll take to the United Nations or submit. Again, we don't know what the COVID, what's going to be happening, but the idea is at least we will be submitting something on or around December 10th, somewhere between December 10th and December 16th, I think it is, to commemorate. That's when Paul Robeson took the We Charge Genocide petition to the United Nations. So we're going to commemorate that and at the same time advance the work of our ancestors. This is historic. And so we're now putting the call out next week to artists that's supposed to be of goodwill, good consciousness, whatever you want to call it, and we're going to see who's going to step up and support this effort. And we're talking about not just vocal or musicians, but also actors and writers and all of that. They're considered artists too. So now, again, we're not begging but white folks to do nothing. We get ready to fight for what is rightfully ours, and we're going to do it our way. Okay, so again, I think this will be something that we'll be able to bring to them in terms of supporting this Black Credit Union. What do you think about that, my brother?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's critical, and we need to teach this history because this work we're engaged in didn't start today. And that's sometimes what's lost with the Black Lives Matter movement is that, the connection with the folks who've been doing this work, for centuries, right? Even folks who have been doing this work, for recent generations that are still around are not necessarily being connected with that work. And it is critical that we understand that. As a matter of fact, as you mentioned, Brother Lasana, one of the reasons, well, the name Appeal, when we were organizing to decide what we're going to call this entity, the name Appeal comes from David Walker's Appeal, right?
I was going to ask you about that. Wow, yes.
Absolutely. And if you're familiar with David Walker's Appeal, exactly what we're talking about. Because we're not trying to appeal to anybody else but us.
Wow.
David Walker's Appeal was an appeal to people of African descent globally.
Wow.
And he was talking about ancient Kemet. This is like during slavery in America, a Black man wrote a book that talked about ancient Kemet, targeting African people. So this is not new stuff, right? And but the more we connect what we're doing right now with what's been done in the past. Paul Robeson, you know, obviously
yes.
Marcus Garvey's birthday just recently passed.
Yes.
I mean, and the anniversary
coming.
Of the it's coming, and the anniversary
the
of the Red, Black, and
right.
Green recently passed.
Yes.
So
yes.
you know, all that history is very much connected to what
yes.
we're doing
yes.
right
yes.
now.
Yes.
And the more we connect that history, you know, I think the more it resonates with our people, and it's critical that we do that. So I would definitely support that effort. It's critical.
Absolutely, and we're making it very, very easy. In another week or so, people will be able to go online to sign on, and this is what we call the letter of intent. This is not the actual petition. This is a 3 to 5 year project. So folks will literally have input on some of the things that we're doing in the next few years, because we're talking about also pre-plebiscite sessions, and so. You know, this is a process, and it's an educational thing that has to happen as well. And so, you know, again, I'm getting a lot of kind of sound. I'm not sure if that's you or because, remember, when you're on your phone, everything's going to pick up. So be kind to say that because I'm getting a lot of sound. But at any rate, so yes, I'm really glad to hear you know, that you and Appeal will be, you know, supporting this effort. And that's why I said this is going to be teachable moments, because we're going to see now who will at least sign on, endorse it with letter of endorsement, make a pledge. And we're asking folks, if you can just get 10 signatures, including yourself, 10 signatures. I mean, how much would that take? Most people have 10 signatures on their, 10 people on their speed dial. You know?
Yep.
But again, we're going to see exactly who is who and what is what. So stay tuned, folks, because we're going to give you some reports very soon about who has sent us letters of endorsement, who has made pledges, and all that, because we're reaching out to our people. Oh, and one other thing I have to note, because I'm getting a lot of messages from this thing that Goldman Sachs is now doing for 1 million black women. That is not us. We have nothing to do with that. We have no desire to have anything to do with that. It's really a sidetracking thing because they know we're coming with self-determination. And so they want to make certain that they're able to tap into the power of black women. So we're letting folks know straight up, MWM, 1 million black women rising, and none of our affiliates have anything to do with whatever these people are talking about. And they're talking about some serious money. I don't know if you saw it, my brother. They're talking about giving black women $10 billion.
Yes, yeah, I'm familiar with that. And of course, it's not directly to black women. It's really, you know, it's really to entities, either corporations or organizations that you know, supposedly work with black women. Of course, if they'll be vetted by them. So it's really about them being able to control what black
That's
women
right.
do financially, knowing that black women are going to be the engines, you know, especially in terms of, you know, creating new businesses in our community. So them trying to tap into that, it's going to happen. It's going to happen without them. So they might as well, get their foot in the door, you know, so they can benefit from it. They can control how it goes and support who they want to support against those who they don't want to support, I suppose. Yeah,
that's right. And this is why it's important that we make it very clear not only how capitalism works, but how the political aspects of it work, you see. And so, again, this is leverage. This is a way to create influences, to tap into the voting possibilities, to be able to push other agendas and all of that. When people are giving you money, it gives them the access to you, you see. And so best believe quid pro quo puts it mildly. And our people, for whatever reason, do not really see, you know, the Wizard of Oz. They see the yellow brick road and not see the manipulation of how this thing is really being operated behind the screen. Therefore, I'm just saying, Don't fall into the little trap. I know many will, because $10 billion is a lot of money. You know, at least it sounds like a lot of money. So, you know, but I'm literally getting, you know, messages or information about how I can get involved and da-da-da-da, and I'm like, it's funny. It's really, really funny to me, but it is what it is. But we've got a plan of action. And like I said, we're going to be reaching out to black businesses to see if they will support our agenda, our mission. And again, we're just focusing on black businesses from the U.S. and the diaspora. Time to play the game a little differently. That's the bottom line. Anyway, moving right along. So, okay. So what I'd like for you to do, my brother, is give folks the email, I mean, the website information again and any contact information as well. And we want to get that out there to them again.
Absolutely. So appealinc.org, that's the best place to really get information and sign up. For any event, workshops that you might want to attend or to donate or to join or just to get more information about the organization. We're on social media, every platform of social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I think we may even have a Snapchat. Everything is at appealinc.org. So it's appealinc.org. And you can actually go on our Facebook page and, you know, just search Appeal Incorporated. And there's a lot of information about Dr. Renoco, how you can support the family because there's an effort to raise money. His body is actually should be in Los Angeles or being traveling to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Right. So, but there's still a lot of need for community support. This brother is a part of the community, so information can be found on Appeal's Facebook page. But you can also email us at info@appealinc.org. That's info@appealinc.org. Oh, and our phone number is 800-711-7851 if somebody, you know, has a question. But the best way to reach us is by email, and you can get information on our website or through any of our social media platforms. All at appealinc.org.
All right. All right. So, family, listen, we're going to give you all the opportunity to come in on the conversation, and you can best believe this is just the first of many to come because we're going to make sure that we make this connection be as viable, productive, and you know, all of that as best as possible. And so with that said, we're going to open up the phone lines for you all, and you can press one now, and that way we'll know if you have a question or a comment. We certainly would love to have you join us, okay? All right, so we're talking about appeal. We're talking about, you know, being able to manage our own monies in the way that it's going to really be productive. In the meantime, my brother, you know, one of the things that we're working on, and we'll be talking about it at our upcoming summit, which, by the way, is going to be in – I'm still getting all this noise. Is that you or something's going on with the phones?
I'm not hearing it, so I don't – no, I hope not. Hope it's not my beard.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm not hearing
you know
it.
What? Okay. Okay, cool. All right. So it is September. From September we're gonna be in DC with our summit, by the way. The date is from September the 29th through October the 2nd. We'll be in DC for our Million Black Women Rising Summit. And one of the workshops or one of the sessions that we'll be talking about and introducing is bartering, trade, and other kinds of exchange. Okay?
Are you familiar with Susu's?
Of course. That's one of the
We do workshops on those. You know,
oh,
and we've been able
wonderful.
To have several of our. You know, we don't have one as an organization, but we encourage our members to create them in their circles. So many of our members have been able to do that, you know, through those workshops, and they're really growing. Some of them invest in real estate. Some just deal with, you know, the immediate whatever the media focuses on those of the members of the SUSU. So that's a real ancient tool, really, for saving
money.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we're looking at doing as a part of our sisterhood. These are some of the things that we're talking about and enabling us to grow and develop. And again, not just financially, but in a holistic kind of manner, the relationships that need to be built. You know, we've gotten to the point now, that's right, exactly. And this system has definitely created all kinds of stuff to, you know, make sure that we don't trust each other. I mean, even more so than regular, you know, than normal. So we got to now do some things to change that. So maybe that's one of the things for that Appeal will be able to provide for us is a workshop in Susu.
That sounds great. That sounds great. And you know, and
all
it's
right.
Interesting how, you know, when you're part of institutions like that or entities like that, like the Susus, and you are in a situation where you work with African people, where you have to trust African people, and you get to unlearn so many of the things that we've learned in the broader community that causes us not to trust each other, especially when it comes to money. We have to learn to not just work with each other, but trust each other. And Susu is a great vehicle for that. In addition to the money part, the social part, and the reset part is critical.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Okay. Moving right along. So let me see. My goodness. No one has a question or a comment. That's kind of shocking, but okay. All right, so now that is going to be wonderful. I'm jotting that down. We are definitely going to have a session on the development of putting a Susu in place for our sisters, and that's one of the sessions. I do see a few people now are putting in for a question. All right, family, we'll come to you in a moment. Let me see. Was something else I wanted to add? What about investments? Do you provide like workshops or sessions that will enable a better understanding of investments, be it stocks or just, you know, general kinds of investments?
Absolutely. I mean, that's usually in high rotation in our series. As a matter of fact, during the last financial literacy series that we did, which we had a risk and reward in investing, evaluation, and risk management. You know, we looked at all types of investments, everything from cryptocurrency to stocks and bonds and whatnot, and looked at, you know, how to get into any of those and looked at risk assessment, because each person, depending on who they are, how old they are, you know, whatever, you know, demographic situations, you know, they may be in, are critical to knowing, you know, where they're comfortable. Some folks are more risk averse than others. So really understanding where you are is critical to find the type of investment that's best for you. And, of course, we also have, you know, workshops on real estate investors, investment. We have many of our members who are into real estate. Some are agents, you know, and, you know, they come through and talk about how you become a real estate investor. So, yes, investments is critical. We have, you know, as we talk about, say, as we talk about, creating Susu circles, we also talk about creating generational wealth and, you know, and transferring generational wealth. You know, we have a few folks in our circle that help people, you know, write wills and create trust avoid probate. I mean, we lose so much wealth. I mean, we lose a lot of wealth to us just selling out for short because you got some quick cash, right?
Right.
You know, children selling their parents or grandparents' property just because they got some cash, leaving nothing for the next generation. But besides that, we also lose a lot of wealth through probate because Black folk don't have any wills written down. So when someone transitions, unfortunately, guess what? The government is going to take so much of that money before they finally figure out who it goes to and how much and so on and so forth. And we can avoid all that and keep that wealth in our communities by being proactive. So, you know, creating plans for a generational legacy is critical. Mm-hmm, so we do workshops and all that.
Wonderful. All right. That's what we're talking about. Let's get this thing rolling. Okay, we're going to go to our lines. And caller, you are at 1559. 1559. Welcome to the segment of New Day. And your mic is open.
Hey, Dr. Filet, it's Sister Keisha. How are you?
Hey, Sister Keisha, how you be?
Very, very busy in your city this last
couple of days. I read some texts earlier. You going all over the darn city.
All over the city, you know, just trying to make some connections, not just with the ladies of SWAP, but other women in this city. It's just interesting that you had the topic with the brother talking about financing and generational wealth. That's something that we have talked about on a different level before. And we're looking at some real estate opportunities here as well. But the thing is, unless we have a political and a military apparatus to protect what we build and what we, as they say on the street, stack up, they're going to come and take it away from us again. Just like Tulsa, just like Rosewood, just like Wilmington, Delaware, and so on and so forth. We cannot be so oblivious to the fact that if we continue to build wealth, and I'm seeing black businesses grow in every city that we go to. We've been on a tour, various cities, various counties, just to see exactly what's happening. And there is a growth in black business, in particular black finance. But if you don't have a mechanism to protect it, you are dead in the water. And I don't care what anybody says. And that's what we are here to do, to make sure that you have that apparatus to protect it politically and militarily. Otherwise, we're playing with ourselves. We can't get free without money. So that is a given. You know, that's why we continue to push this reparations memorandum. If we don't get that bread, we playing with ourselves. Money is key to everything. And I went on a walking tour earlier today, the sister was telling us about the debtor's prison, you know, back in the late 1700s. Well, they got debtor's prisons again today.
That's right.
And
that's
who's
right.
filling them up? We are. So we can play this game that, you know, we can just do it on faith alone. You's a goddamn liar. You need some money in the pocket, and you also need something to protect that money, or they're going to take it from you. And that's what they're doing very strategically with this gentrification. And black black business owners, it's your responsibility to protect your consumer. I don't know how many times I have to say this to black businesses. You're not a goddamn Democrat or Republican. It's your responsibility to protect your black consumer. That's how the Asians got a hate crime bill passed in less than 6 months. They understand this mechanism. Black business, you cannot leave your black consumer base out here in the water, or I hope you get exactly what's coming to you. That's just the way that I see it. So as we travel throughout the country and various countries outside of the U.S. trying to make this plain to our people, if you're not protected politically and militarily, we're playing with ourselves. So I'm glad you had this conversation tonight. I'm going to continue to hang on and listen. I tried to get the ladies to come in, but they are really tired. So, you know, we've been out since 7 o'clock this morning and just coming in now. So everybody's pretty much tired and pretty much spent. But you can best believe that SWAP will issue a letter of support for We Charge Genocide movement. I've spoken to the ladies about it. I also still want you to meet the ladies. If we're not able to do it tomorrow, then we'll definitely do it on a conference call, a Zoom call, or whatever to make that happen.
All right, my sister. Did you get the information about the drum circle?
I did. We're going to try to hit that before we leave out of the city tomorrow.
All right. Well, let me know if you do, because I'll be able to meet you there.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And shout out to Now Cafe. The food was legit.
Oh, yeah. That's family right there.
I'm eating my butter pecan ice cream right now.
I know that's right. All right, my sister. My brother, did you have a response for Sister Keisha before she leaves us? Go ahead.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, she's on point. We have to, you know, and that's why we have to be students of history. We have to understand that it's, you know, just stacking up the chips isn't isn't going to do it. We've done that before, right? And we've seen what happened. So for us, it needs to be a global struggle, global mm-hmm. effort. You know, this is what we're focused on, as you can see in our mission, is not just what's happening in the United States. It's not about building up wealth even here. I personally don't feel as if you can protect anything that you build here if you don't have a support system outside of this country. I think that, you know, we need to be thinking as global Africans, and there's a lot more capacity to control and to build wealth, but to control and to, you know, to be masters of our futures.
Yes.
You know, by being a global citizens, and especially on the continent, there's a lot more opportunity to grow your wealth on the continent than there is anywhere else. That's why everybody else is there. That's why the Chinese are there. You, folks get mad about the Chinese being there. Why aren't we there? If there's a voice, if there's a vacuum, somebody's going to fill it. You know, so while we're complaining about somebody else being there, we're not thinking about the fact that we need to be there. So our effort is not just focused on what we build here, because we know that the proximity we have to the belly of the beast, you know, the easier it is for them to access what you build. So we have to be global mm-hmm. with this effort. We have to have collaboration. We have to be building in places that will be challenging for anybody to try and reach.
All right. I know that's right. All right, Sister Keisha, hopefully I'll see you tomorrow. And just to remind everyone again, of course, Thorough Black Talk is on every Thursday, 8 o'clock. Because Sister Keisha, Brother Ted, Brother Ashe, that's YouTube. All right, Sister
Yes,
Keisha.
Indeed. Be well, my sister. All right.
Thank you. Peace to you. All right, family, listen, going black for a minute. Before we go to our next caller, I just want to remind everyone that November the 1st is National Black Solidarity Day. Now, we're putting it out there now because we want to make sure that folks begin to observe this on a national level. And what are we going to do? We're going to support black businesses. So even though National Black Solidarity Day says don't spend any money at all on that day, we know how folks really are. So what we're going to do is we're going to do something else. We're going to provide for you, if you've got to spend some money, we're going to provide to you a listing of black businesses that you can buy from. And of course, any other time, but certainly as a way of really trying to get this Black Solidarity Day moving again. And by the way, it's more than 50 years old. It started over 50 years ago in New York. We are now talking about, as the brother just mentioned, we've got to embrace our history. Folks did something during that time period, and we want to now not just try to recreate wheels, but tap into our history. So again, November 1st is National Black Solidarity Day. Now, we'll be giving you more information, of course, as we lead up to it, the history of it. And now we're looking at different cities, different communities to set up your own Black Solidarity Day, either committee or task force or whatever, so that we can synchronize our efforts. Now going back to our brother, I just want to, because again, the appeal organization has a listing of black manufacturers, not just businesses, manufacturers. This is something that MWM has been pushing for years. Yes, black business, but we got to start producing our own stuff. So again, what we're proposing, my brother, hint, 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 is to get the listing of the black manufacturers in time for our 24-year anniversary, and that way when Kwanzaa time comes, we will already have the capability to disseminate businesses that black folks, our people, can support during Kwanzaa time.
Absolutely. We can definitely do that. And we also, in addition to having the manufacturers, and we have a Buy Black page on our website.
Yes.
And on that Buy Black page, we have links to directories that have black, that list black businesses. We have We Buy Black, which is a black, I'll just say it's a black Amazon. I hate to put it that way, but you're supposed to understand what it is. A lot of black businesses sell their products through them, including some of the ones that we carry at the co-op, like True, like the folks that make the dish detergent and, Umoja light bulbs. Black folk make light bulbs. Hello? Stuff that, we make everything. But it can't just stop at us making it. We got to buy it. Because white folks ain't going to buy it. If we don't buy it, we know no one's going to buy it because they're not going to buy it. And then they're going to close down. And then, 5 years from now, we're going to say, why don't black folk make socks? Well, we're making socks. Were you buying the socks? We got to connect that. So it's not just the making. We got to support it. We make trash bags. Toothpicks, toothbrushes. We buy black as well as several other sites that list black businesses or carry products manufactured by black businesses. You can order from wherever you are. So those you can find that at the Buy Black link on our website as well.
Wonderful. All right, family, we're going to go back to you on the line. And let's see, caller, you are at 9498. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 9498, your mic is open. Okay.
Mr. Filet, can you hear me?
Okay, I hear you now, Brother Ray Ray. Hey.
Okay, hello, Philadelphia family. Hello, Keisha. Hope you're having a good time out there. I also want to thank you for I could go all the way back to the late, great Amos Wilson when he tried his best. Sister Filet always talks about what are we going to do? What are we going to do? But I want to thank the speaker for bringing it out. The answers is right there, and he laid it out. Mm-hmm. But I also go back to the late, great Amos Wilson when he tried his best. He even had the pamphlets fixed up, the giveaways for the co-op, for the bank that he was talking about, what was the name of it? For the bank.
Right. I forgot the name too.
The co-op, but he had, flyers and, the credit union. Sorry. He had the flyers for the credit union, and he opened up with nothing the printing company on 125th Street. And so the answers is there. And I wouldn't just mind getting starting off with one building and going from there. So thank you for bringing it up, and I'm on the website. Just thank you, and it's a start, whoever's willing to throw down.
Yes.
Just thank you for that credit union, and we could not get black folks in the Bronx and in the conscious community to even join that credit union. It was like pulling goddamn teeth. And at least you mention it and you're trying, and can't really say what are we going to do when you have speakers on there all the time that has programs for us to start.
And Brother Ray Ray, let me just say this because, again, our position is always to try to figure out how we're going to do certain things. So one of the reasons why we're connecting with the appeal group is MWM really has a good capability in terms of marketing. We've kind of demonstrated that. I haven't utilized it over the years primarily because some of our growing pains had to happen.
You know, we had to literally see, you know, for ourselves certain things that were some things were told, some things wasn't told in terms of what's really going on with the movement for our people and you know, why it has dissipated or why it has gone left or whatever, and how we need to regroup it to bring it forward. So we went through that process. So my point is, one of the things that we're going to be doing is assisting in whatever way possible, appeal and other groups, even with the Mackey, learning educational lecture series. We're going to be working with selected entities to help promote and market what their, you know, their programs, their brand, their products. We really have a very, you know, good capability of doing that. We just haven't done it over the years, again, because sometimes you can't play all your cards. You have to let stuff unfold and be the way that it got to be. And we went through that pain and that agony. But the point now is we have a lot of strategic moves that we're getting ready to make that will, we feel very strongly, change or shift, you know, what has happened, meaning our people are programmed not to support our people. They're programmed. We know that. We can prove it. Like you just said, you know, the great Amos Wilson, Dr. Amos Wilson, was working on doing something to help our people and for the most part could not get folks to support that. MWM, same thing. Other entities, same thing. So we have to figure out what do we need to do to change that. And so watch what happens. We got some things that we can ready to pull out the bag, and we feel very strongly it's going to really shift, you know, the paradigm in the manner that we want. And I'll just say this briefly, and you'll get a general idea, because we've been talking about it, and now on August the 31st or thereabouts, it goes into effect. And that is our BBBCO, okay? Oh, my gosh, these people in these motorcycles, it's crazy. But anyway, the BBB code, we talked about it before. That is, and my brother, this is something you probably haven't heard us talk about or you haven't seen it because we didn't put it out there until we were ready. Brother Kalichi, we have a component now called the BBB code. That's why when I read the thing and saw Stephen Biko, I was like, yep, this has got to be the connection. But we started the BBB code several years ago, and we've developed it over the years, and now we're ready to go with it. But it consists of black beauticians, braiders, barbers, and cosmetologists, hence BBBCO, right?
Right.
So we created a membership that launches August 31st or thereabout. It creates this network of specifically of braiders, barbers, beauticians, and cosmetologists, right? This is one of the oldest businesses in black communities nationwide. So to have a network that is exclusively of them, that gets us not only a marketing capability like none other, it literally connects us to self-employed, self-generated businesses. But the other thing is it gives us the capability to market to them more natural products, because a lot of them, are using, a lot of chemicals and whatever. And we know we ain't going to change a whole lot of that, but at the same time, to at least introduce to them more natural products, shampoo or, whatever, that still gives us the capability to increase sales, generate greater revenue, and hopefully a better health interaction, you see. So I'm putting that out to everyone just to let y'all know how really, very shrewd we are. And not just shrewd, we are pretty intelligent on how we know how to do business. And in a way that has a historical connection as well as just some basic common sense kind of stuff. So that's why we're very interested in knowing about the manufacturers, because once we have that in place, now, to a greater extent, we can then start distributing that to the black businesses that carry those types of things. Hence, the beauticians, the braiders, and the barbers, and the cosmetologists, you see?
Absolutely.
So we will be, you see, it makes perfect sense. So that's a built-in targeted entity that we know, you know, have the type of clientele, they have the kind of business that would definitely be interested in certain products. So MWM will assist in providing samples, literature, et cetera. We will have that service available to Black businesses starting August 31st.
That's beautiful.
Well, thank you very much for bringing it out. It's there. We just got to take a chance and jump on it.
Yes, sir. All right, brother. All right. Thank you so much. Always. Love you.
All right.
All right. So, family, again, we've been working on this BBB code for a while. We're now ready to go with it. If you all are, and I'm sure most of you do, you're seeing somebody, a barber, a braider, a loctician or something, we'd appreciate if you would send us their business card or you can email us their information so that we can start reaching out to them very soon. With information about the BBB Co. All right.
I just wanted to do a shout out to Brother Sababu Platter, who has been continuing the work of Brother Amos Wilson, transcribing his many lectures into books. Critical mm-hmm. books focus on particular things, one being the falsification of African consciousness, and many others. They're at work. I mean, they're like, well, these brothers are working 24 hours a day at African world systems to produce these books that information that Amos Wilson had really accumulated. You know, even though we lost him, it seems like so long ago, but it seems also mm-hmm. seemed like he's never really, you know, left us. Obviously, we know that Blueprint for Black Power is a cornerstone, so many products. I mean, these brothers are putting out so much of his work. I mean, they've got about 30 books or so just coming out, and it's like every year they're coming out with another one because he has so much information they left us with. So I really want to commend those brothers for continuing that work.
And where are they based at?
They're based in New York.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, based in New York City.
We would like to connect with them because, again, one of our key focuses is going to be doing business. And so any of our brothers and sisters that are producing, manufacturing, or whatever, we want to be able to connect with them. So as we're building our sisterhood and what we call the Global AFCOM Village, we want to be able to provide our folks with information. Again, the We Charge Genocide is going to give us the capability to connect with a lot of people. Again, we're looking at accumulating or at least getting our first 1,000,000 signatures very soon. So, you know, that's going to be a powerful network to start with.
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Indeed. All right, family, so listen, we're going to go back to our lines. Again, if you have a question or a comment, we are talking with Brother Keglishi Egwin. And how do you pronounce your last name again? Is it Egwin?
It's Egwin. Egwin, yes.
Okay. Got it. Okay, very good. All right, so family, we're going to ask you if you have a question or a comment. You can certainly press 1 now. We just heard from Brother Ray Ray. Of course, there's New York in the house. It's Sister Keisha and her crew. They're in Philly right now, even though, of course, they're out of the New York area as well. And family, again, we certainly welcome your comments, your thoughts. I want to remind you, sisters, please feel free to connect with us. We will be in Washington, D.C. for our summit, 1,000,000 Black Women Federation. Our summit is coming. You will be able to not only learn more about what we call AMBER, that's the acronym for 1,000,000 Black Women Rising. It is a federation. We have structured it in that manner
for very strategic and political purposes. And but this is also something else. We're going to be paying tribute to the generations of our women, our freedom-fighting women, but particularly in these last 70 years. So we're talking about the women of SNCC, NAACP, the RNA, the, Nation of Islam, Marcus Garvey, UNIA. Over these past 70 years, black women have played very integral roles in the development of both civil rights movement, black liberation movement, and so many other things relevant to us getting some justice and freedom. Well, we want to, again, connect the dots, but also connect the generations. So this year, when we do the Million Black Women Rising Federation, we're also going to do a special salute to what we call the real mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement. Black women who did various things, support, membership, whatever, but to help our people get some real justice and freedom. And note, we said real mothers, daughters, sisters of the movements. See, because there are many movements, there's many groups, many organizations, many campaigns, many projects, but for the purpose of getting some justice and liberation. Now note, 9 times out of 10, our women did not just, you know, do these things when it happened to someone close to them. Yes, I said it. Our women did things because we had that desire, that need, that understanding to help our people. That's why we said real mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement. And it's not to try to take anything away from anyone because they got involved as a result of tragedy. We're not trying to say that. But we do have to make some things clear or clearer. And that is that historically speaking, it wasn't because one of our sons or fathers or daughters or whatever was murdered. It was about fighting the system, you see. So we just want to kind of keep some things in their proper contexts. And again, it's not to try to discredit anybody unnecessarily, but it is to make some things clearer. As black women, we have a responsibility in terms of our people. Our people. And so again, we invite our women to join us to pay tribute to the real black mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement, the Ida B. Wells, the Ella Bakers, the Fannie Lou Hamers, you know, so many, the Frances Quest Wellsing, we could go on and on. These are real mothers, daughters, sisters of the movement. So join us starting September, the 28th, I think, through October the 2nd. We will be in Washington, D.C. We'll be giving you more information next week. And the other part to that is the call to black women is that we will be commemorating the 70th year anniversary that black women met in Washington, D.C. That's why we selected Washington this year, because 70 years ago, black women put the call out to Negro women. And note, I've talked to historians and scholars, and most of them knew nothing about this particular historical gathering. 70 years ago, Shirley Graham Du Bois, Louise Patterson, Paul Robeson's wife, Eslanda Robeson, the great Queen Mother Moore, and of course the wonderful Bea Richards, to name a few, met in Washington, D.C., made the call to Negro women. And what was the call for? To demand a meeting with the President of the United States. Well, sisters, family, community, we're going to recreate or reenact some of that. This will be a historical, teachable moment, and at the same time, take it as a business, meaning we're making a demand to meet with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. And we are going to ask them, since they both said that black women played a very
critical, key role in them getting elected. We want to know what is their position on reparations. What is their position on the increase of violence and abuse of our women and girls, to kidnapping, sex trafficking? We want to know, what is your position on the fact that COINTELPRO play the role in our political prisoners? We want to know, President Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, since you said black women help y'all get in office, well, we're going to do a Janet Jackson number. What have you done for us lately?
Right.
Anyway. So, sisters, for those who say they're leaders, organizers, activists, or just plain mama, we need your support one way or the other. Either join us, make a pledge, do whatever, but do something. We're demanding a meeting with President Biden and Kamala Harris. We need your support. We got to represent. So, want more information, please email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. And one other thing that we'll be asking President Biden and Vice President Harris is, before anyone else or any more discussion about, for example, the student loan debt thing, black students, black families get first dibs. All of the student loan stuff needs to be rescinded, rescinded as a part of goodwill in terms of our reparations. Let us start with some things that can happen right now, and that's one of them. The release of our political prisoners, the rescinding of student loan debt. And we got some other stuff too, but we just wanted to give you a little taste of what we're getting ready to present. Now, note that our sisters did this 70 years ago, and while they did not meet with, I think it was Harry S. Truman, they did meet with representatives from the Justice Department and some other people, because that was part of the demand also. So now we bring this action forward, and this time to come out with some real results. So, again, if you want more information about how you can join what we call the Sojourners for Truth, Self-Determination and Justice, we welcome you. If you are a serious sister, we welcome you to join us. And by the way, the group was in 1951 came about as a result of the poem that Bea Richards wrote called A Black Woman Speaks, and she talked about white supremacy and the interesting roles that white women played in our destruction and their own. 1951. Well, she actually wrote the poem in 1950, but delivered it in 1951. So they came together. They were inspired by that poem by Bea Richards. They came together. They called themselves the Sojourners for Truth and Justice. Who knew? That just shows you, this is why, again, when we do our summit, we will be bringing forward the Black Women's Historical Society, so that we can start documenting our own stuff as well. Anyway, going back to our brother. My brother, did you know about this historical gathering that took place in D.C. 70 years ago?
I did not know about that. That's remarkable.
Isn't
wow.
it?
I did not know about that.
Listen, I'm telling you, I've talked to scholars. I've talked to, you know, various people in you know, but it just showed you how now is the time that this divine energy and other things is definitely manifesting. And we're the ones. We, as the saying goes, we're the ones we've been waiting for. We can keep talking about the next generation and all of that, and we shall and will. But there's some stuff that's right here, right now, that got to get done, and we're the ones we've been waiting for.
And so was that the first Black March on Washington? And how many participants did they have for that?
So according to what I've read so far, and believe me, there's not much that at least we haven't been able to find a lot. What we saw is approximately 150 women gathered.
And these were women who primarily represented, you know, different groups, organizations for the most part. Okay, so they were kind of already involved in something, but different, definitely different, you know, walks of life. Again, Queen Mother Moore, yeah, they all know Queen Mother Moore, right? And, of course, you know, Shirley Du Bois. And so you had an array of black women from different perspectives. You know, some were communists, some were nationalists, you know, some were, you know, whatever. So, again, it was a nice flavor. But to answer your question, it appears that it was roughly 150. And they did, you know, make the statement. They went, you know, up to the White House and issued the demand. They did ended up meeting with the, I believe, Attorney General or someone else. Well, ours is going to be a little different. We're going to issue the demand, but we don't want to meet with them just right now because we want two separate meetings. And we want that to be scheduled, right? But anyway, so that's one. Now, whether it was the first actual march, I'm not sure. But what the historical information is saying, that it certainly kicked some things off. And, of course, it was before the March on Washington
right.
that Dr. King had. Yep, so that is recorded. And you can see some clippings from the conference. They did have a conference for a couple of days, right, which is what we're going to do. There's going to be some strategy sessions and other things, workshops. And there is some footage that you can find at the Smithsonian. If you put in the call to Negro women, 1951,
right,
you're literally able to find some of the footage. It's in black and white, and it's not a lot, and you can't hear it really well, but you will be able to see and hear a little bit of it. And I do have the actual pamphlet, well, a copy of the pamphlet that they were distributing, you know, for this. I have that. Okay, so I'll definitely send that to you, my brother, because, again, this is so important that our people know of some of the things that our women did. Now, again, this was really a part of, oh, by the way, one of the things that encouraged them or motivated them to take the stand was black women were being raped routinely by white men. And there were several cases where the women either tried to kill the man or did kill him. And so these women, you know, wanted to support the women and also raise the issue that this was happening, because as civil rights and all this other stuff was being discussed, that wasn't nowhere in the picture, that our women and girls were being raped. There was no conversation, no act, no nothing. And so they took action, but they also took action in support of what was happening to our men. All this is recorded, or happened to our people, period. All this is recorded.
Right.
So this is some of the information that we will be sharing with our people leading up to our upcoming summit. And again, these are some teachable moments. All right, family, we're going to get ready to close this session out. It's been a wonderful conversation. We've been talking with our brother, Dr. Kelechi Ekwin. And, again, we've been talking about appeal. I'm certainly, look, I've passed being having it been appealing. I'm going to be signing up, okay?
Right.
All right. Because this is certainly something that I know, you know, that we have to connect to. And, family,
absolutely,
we're going to be bringing you other sessions. We're going to be talking more about, I don't really like the terminology financial literacy. I don't know why. It's just something there. But
it sounds too small. I hear you. Yeah, it's so limiting in terms of what people think of. Of course, we understand that our focus is much broader than that. So it's sort of, you don't want to pigeonhole it into that, you know. But I understand. Yes.
I'm going to come up with another word just for us, but it's coming. It's definitely coming. But my point is, like, what I like to do is maybe something on a monthly, like you or someone from the group, from the organization, come on, and, you know, we could select a different topic and just, you know, bring about education, information, and greater connectivity. What? How does that sound to you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds great. Like I said, we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of committees, a lot of committee chairs, a lot of platforms. So there's a lot of folks who could play that role. And let me mention that we the weekend before your summit in D.C. that's Sunday. Mm-hmm. I think your summit starts, is it a Tuesday or is it a Monday?
I think it's on a Wednesday.
Okay, on the Wednesday.
Yeah,
okay,
it's going to start on the Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I think
right,
it's the 29th.
The Sunday. Yes, because that event is on the 26th, you know, which is the Sunday, you know, before that, we're actually mm-hmm. having a big fundraiser mm-hmm. for the credit union, okay. and it's going to feature a lot of. It's going to be on. It's going to be virtual, because we're still. You know, still dealing with this pandemic and trying to, you know, give folks a level of comfort. And we want people from all over the world to be able to support. So we're doing a virtual this year. We're going to have a lot of, you know, talk about black entertainers, you know, people, the Black Notes, which I mentioned earlier, which was a group founded by mm-hmm. Brother Lasana. Mm-hmm. Many of the members, like Sister Mamuna, mm-hmm. and many others, Sister Bashir, Ayanna Gregory, and Free Benjamin usually, you know, performing our programs. You know, we got groups like Hillel and, you know, Tamika Love Jones. So many great entertainers will be part of the program. You know, so if you all connect with us on the website, you know, sign up or just join a mailing list or go to the Facebook page and like it or whatever, you will get information on all that happening. And that's going to be a great opportunity to support this effort and really support black entertainers as well. And hopefully we can connect some of them, including Afee Soul and many others, to the work that you're doing to really highlight and promote black entertainers.
Oh, that would be wonderful, because one of the things that the We Charge Genocide 21 project will be working on after we do the kickoff. Now, again, the kickoff family, again, September 4th in New York. We're going to assemble first at the African Burial Ground. We'll do our ceremony for our ancestors at the African Burial Ground. From there, we're going to go over to Wall Street. Again, this is where they sold us. And then we'll go over to the UN to make the announcement. We call it, of course, the Declaration of Self-Determination. And also we begin the process for, you know, preparing for the boots on the ground, which is getting the million signatures. So this is phase one. Phase two is we're going to D.C. next year. So this is the kickoff. And then this will help get us ready to do something very similar, reparatory justice in D.C., We Charge Genocide, for next year. So this is the kickoff this year. But this whole process, one of the things we'll be doing is holding concerts, again, to create awareness, also the capability of participating, et cetera. In various cities, there's going to be concerts. We call them Black Human Rights Concerts. So, again, that connects us to the artists. This will give them venues to showcase their talent or, you know, their art, as well as helping us to generate funds and, of course, getting that information circulated. Okay? So, you see, it's a win-win situation, y'all. All right. Okay, before we close out, I do want to give a quick report. This is, of course, Black August, and we would be remiss if we did not talk about our political prisoners. Again, you can go to the Jericho Movement site and get an abundance of information about political prisoners. But for now, I can tell you, Mumi Abu-Jamal, there are some actions coming starting on Monday. There's a campaign that will be placed in the public venue in regard to his visitation.
Of course, as we all know with the COVID thing, there has been limited kinds of physical visitations. And so up until very recently, Mumia was able to have video visits or communications. Well, for some reason, that has been discontinued. And so they're really fighting to be able to have him to be able to meet with his brother. So we'll have more information on that after Monday, and by the next program we'll be able to give you some specifics on who to contact and whatever other updates it is on that. The other important update has to do with Russell Maroon Schultz. And what has come about is that Brother Russell is now wheelchair-bound. He's partially blind, and he is now suffering from stage 4 terminal pancreatic cancer. Okay, and so, you know, the demand for him to have compassionate release is now being really, really put out there. As a matter of fact, let me scroll down for a moment. There's a rally, hold on 1 minute. Okay, there's a rally here in Philly on Monday, which is August 16th at 12 noon. They're asking folks to wear white. He has been denied medical transfer to a home hospital. That's what the demand is now, a medical transfer to a home hospice. And so an emergency action is now in progress. Again, folks will assemble on Monday, August the 16th at 12 noon in front of the Philadelphia Injustice Center, which is located at 1301 Filbert Street. Again, this is for Brother Baba Russell Maroon Schultz. People are asked to assemble on Monday, August the 16th, here in Philadelphia, 1301 Filbert Street. Okay, and if you want more information, you can just go to Free Maroon Now. Okay, that's the update on our political prisoners. And I'll have a report for you for next week, because I do plan to attend on Monday. And there is one other program. Let me see when that is. Oh, at 7 o'clock p.m., they're doing something on Zoom. So, again, you can contact Free Maroon Now to get more information. All right, family, we're going to get ready to close this session out. My brother, we're going to come back to you to get your closing comments. And then we're
going to
call this a wrap.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity for Pio to share the work that we're doing. You know, we are in the community. We're from the community. You know, all of our key members are long-distance runners in the community, you know, doing this work on a grassroots level. We're global, and we're definitely eager and happy to connect with Africans, you know, doing this work to liberate African people. And we hope that Appeal is, and our mission is in line with your personal mission to liberate our people. So please, you know, go to appealinc.org, get information, join, donate, attend, whatever your level of comfort is. And go to social media and look for appealinc.org, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, you can communicate with us that way, of course. By email at info@appealinc.org is probably the best way. If you have a question, somebody will respond. And we're so eager to build this relationship that we are actually, I should say we're starting, but we started a while back. But but we're growing. We're going to grow it even more and do more things, because it's all about, you know, the best currency we have is our relationship with each other. You know, so the more we grow these relationships with each other, the more we connect with each other, you know, the more we can do, the more success we'll have individually.
Absolutely. Ashe, ashe, ashe. All right, my brother. Well, I thank Brother Craig, Baba Yao, for really kind of pushing it and making sure that it happened. Like you said, we've been trying to do it for a while, but we're here now. We got it now. So, again, we give thanks.
All right, family, again, we're going to close this session out. I want to remind you, again, this is Black August. Oh, I forgot to give you the report on Reverend Joy Powell. Well, I'll definitely do that next week, particularly with sisters. We got to step it up and help our sister. She is probably the only female political prisoner right now that we are aware of. And so, again, we're going to give you some updates on that next week. But, family, we got to go. And, again, we thank all of you for tuning in. And pass the word. We're here every week. We're going into our 14th year. Okay, so come on now. Put the word on out there. For those of you who are interested in being a part of any of the MWM projects, initiatives, We Charge Genocide 21, the Call to Black Women, et cetera, feel free to hit us up via email at nationalmwm@aol.com, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can text us at area code 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. All right, family, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Maat and Hotep. But remember, there can never be any real peace, meaning Hotep, until there's truly Maatic justice. Because you know what we say, my brother? We say if there's no justice, there's no what?
Peace.
No peace.
No peace.
All right, family. Until next time, we also say, Pomoja to the Shinda. Together, we shall win. Thank you, my brother. Talk to you later on this week.
Thank you.
Peace
out. Yeah, thank you. We'll definitely do that. I'm